Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast, presents episode 453, Are We Fixed Yet? Recorded live on November 21st, 2014. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I'm your host, Duststorm.
I'm your other host, Biowolf.
And this week, we're going to be talking about the Halo Championship Series. Because of the recent release of the Master Chief Collection, we're seeing some potential going forwards with Halo Esports. We have the Halo Championship Series that got announced just before the launch Invitational, so there's some more information to talk about that, and we have a couple of special guests on with us tonight to help us cover those topics. First is a returning of Jack Fire Dragon. Welcome back.
Hello, nice to be here, even though it is late.
Yeah, well, for you, it's early.
Yeah.
Given the time frame. And then we also have Golden Boy on for the first time on the podcast. Welcome to Podtacular, man.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's been a while since we've been trying to kind of get this going, but we're happy to have you on the show finally. It's great to have you on, get some Halo Pro expertise, some commentary expertise on the show, which is pretty awesome. And you got to commentate during the launch Invitational, which we'll get to that in a little bit. But since this is your first time on the show, you want to give us a quick rundown of how you got involved with the Halo community and what it is that you do within the Halo community.
Yeah, sure. Well, pretty much what I do right now, I do a lot of behind the scenes stuff, and I'll get to that in a little bit. But I mostly do, commentary, esports commentary for a variety of games. But Halo is one of my personal favorites. I was a Halo competitor a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. Wrong, I guess, space opera. But
close enough.
I was a player then. I competed in Reach. I also dabbled a bit in 3 and 2, but I was more of like, you know, competing in COD at the time. And then I ended up, getting into casting. And my first event that I ever casted for Halo full was a UMG's Halo event, which was awesome and a great event to be a part of. And then my second event was the Halo Global Championship. And since then, I had been doing that pretty much. Like, I've been doing a lot of, like, the big Halo events, the Gamescom Showdown. That would be the PAX Prime Invitational as well as the Launch Invitational. I'm going to go to Gfinity next week to cast their LAN event that's going to be going down in London. And of course, Iron Gaming in December, which is going to be very exciting too. So, I'll mostly what I'm trying to do is, not only with my casting, but behind the scenes, I work for Twitch, and I'm trying to obviously grow the Halo scene organically, little by little, through behind the scenes work, working with individual broadcasters and whatnot.
Gotcha. So you've been, I'm a little surprised that the Global Champions was your second time casting for Halo. That's actually pretty cool that you've actually grown that much in such a short time span. I guess that kind of just attributes to the kind of talent that you bring when it comes to casting esports.
Yeah, no. So the Global Championships, it was a little easier to sell that because it was an event that was pretty much made for, the audience that has absolutely no idea what Halo is. Right. And that's been like my goal. Right. Like, how do I get like the person that's never watched competitive Halo before? How do I, grip them? How do I grab them in? Which was something to the credit of Puckett a long time ago, with MLG that he did, exceptionally. And of course, for me, I look up to guys like Puckett. I have nothing but absolute respect for him. So I always like to make sure that I'm, giving the community that same kind of thing, while at the same time also giving it my twist, my kind of take on casting, which I honed doing Call of Duty. So I wanted to make sure that I was bringing that to the table while at the same time bringing in new viewers with excitement, hype, energy, which sometimes the community is like really all for, and then sometimes I'll read on Beyond that they absolutely hate it. But I just keep doing what I do and you know, keep doing it and keep improving, because that's you know, you can't be complacent in this business.
Right. And we're definitely getting a nice challenge of that with the bugs that have been going on with the Master Chief Collection. And we'll get into those a little bit later. But first thing I want to discuss is the reason why I invited you to be on was to talk about the Halo Championship Series, which is the answer that Halo has provided to having a dedicated competitive league for Halo Esports, which is a pretty awesome undertaking. I think a lot of competitive people, and I know for me especially, are really delighted to see that they're willing to put forth the effort to have an official league that can help kind of back some of these third-party tournament organizers and really have a series going on that Halo teams can come in and actually have a place that they know is going to be there.
Yeah, the HCS is a huge undertaking, and it's actually something that's never really been done before, which is pretty cool. So, you know, the thing about the Halo Championship Series is the goal from the beginning was to regrow the Halo community naturally, right? 343, empowering the community, empowering the people who want to, you know, put out great Halo events, right? And grassroots was a big deal back in the day. For like Call of Duty, it was actually a big reason why Call of Duty, you know, grew. Also, when you think about like League of Legends and, you know, Dota, StarCraft, things like that, although StarCraft was more Korea, but still, even to that point though, like the MOBA genre was basically just started from grassroots, a mod from, you know, Warcraft and so on and so forth. And that kind of elicited that growth, right? Because it was something people wanted to participate in. This is the same approach, right? We wanted to make sure that we were doing something that was open. The whole purpose of this was openness and, you know, allowing partners like Iron Gaming, for example, to come into the fold. And Iron Gaming, they've had, you know, bumps in the past, and, you know, we've worked with them, you know, extensively since, you know, RTX, which was one of their last events, which was actually the last event that they ran, you know, a last big event. We've been working with them extensively, and you know, that was the whole point of it, right? How do we get these guys mobilized? How do we get them putting on fantastic events and continuing to do so, not just for Halo as well, right? Because you know, regardless of the fact, we want to make sure that the scene is growing organically and these guys are able to create actual businesses from this. Halo is hopefully going to be one of the main kicking points for all this stuff. We just always want to make sure that we're working with partners strategically, and this was one of those opportunities, so it worked out really well.
Yeah, and the partners that 343 has gone with so far are some of the ones that have kind of helped keep the Halo competitive scene alive since MLG kind of passed it off and since AGL kind of dissolved back earlier last year. And like you were saying, we have IG Columbus, which is coming up in just under a month in December. And then we have the UGC 10K tournament that's coming up at the beginning of January in St. Louis. So those are kind of the two kind of kickoff things that are really going to put the HCS to the test and see how a lot of the competitive teams are really going to take this direction. Now, I don't know if this is something that has been kind of put out there yet, but do you know if 343 is developing certain game types that are going to be supported by HCS, or is it going to be kind of more up to each third party's tournament structure?
Yeah, so to my knowledge, right now where we're at is with Season 1, what you saw at the launch Invitational will more than likely be the game types with some tweaks nonetheless. Like, for example, some spawn tweaks I think are being done on Lockdown in particular. But, you know, for the most part, Season 1 is looking to be what we had at launch Invitational. I don't think that there's going to be any like forged maps brought into the fold, at least not right now. One of the goals for the HCS, again, is that word openness, right? And it's always making sure that people are able to participate in this, whether you are a fan of competitive or if you just like playing with your friends, right? Which obviously that's a whole different topic altogether. We'll I'm sure we'll talk about that later. But, you know, keeping with the, you know, the world of, you know, everything clicking, you know, that's the goal, right? So it's you being able to hop into Team Slayer playlists and play the maps and game types as they are designed for HCS, while at the same time being able to play them in HCS Hopper too. So the reason for that is because, you know, it's creating a game that people, and Halo's, you know, unique like that, right? Is creating a game that not only fans of competitive can play, but the casual people can play. Because at the end of the day, it really doesn't change much, right? I mean, like when you think about, you know, Sanctuary, right? You're still going to have your two snipers. You know, your power up in the middle might change. It might be a rocket. It might be a sword. Who knows what they'll decide, right? But the goal is to just, you know, keep everything the same. And when it comes to Forged maps, that's also going to be something too. Like if you see a Forged map in HCS, you more than likely will see that Forged map in Halo 2 Anniversary playlist, you know, like, or, and also the HCS Hopper. Like that was something that was talked about amongst all of us, Twitch, ESL, 343. And, you know, and I agree with it because it creates, you know, inclusion, you know, like across the board.
Right. And one of the things that whenever I was getting my hands on with the Halo 5 Guardians multiplayer, right? And we were talking about Halo 5 at the time, but it kind of equally applies to the Master Chief Collection and all the games in there, is that one of the things that they want to kind of focus on with Halo 5 is that whenever you go into the game and you're able to go and watch somebody with like the spectator mode, you can actually see if you're going and watching a professional play, you can see their strategy, you can see what they're doing, and you can identify them even if you're just like a casual player and see how they're using the same kind of weapons and the same abilities that you have in any map on any level. So having that kind of familiarity helps a lot of the viewers, even if they're not as competitive or not into the competitive scene, really understand what's going on and actually really engage in whatever they're watching. And that's kind of one of the things that has been really cool for competitive Halo in the past with MLG, is that you just see these pros just go all at it and have a skill level that's far beyond any, like, the majority of Halo players that you probably know. But the fact that they're just using all the same equipment, all the same, like, jumps that you can use is one thing, but to know that they're on such a higher level and they're just able to execute so much better, it's exciting. Yeah. It's like a really fun sport to watch.
Yeah, the thing about back in the day, you know, when MLG was running Halo, is that, and don't get me wrong, I completely understand the reasoning as to why they did what they did. You know, back then it made a lot of sense. Now I don't see it being a thing. Is, you know, while of course the same like weapons and equipment and all that stuff were being used, obviously Forge played a big, big role in competitive Halo. And it got to a point like for Reach, for example, and again, for Reach, I get it, because it was like nothing there, right? Like there was like barely any good maps in that game. But it was like regardless, it was just a very gray game, right? To watch. It was boring to watch, right? You had the Forge good maps because the maps that came with the game were just straight butt. So that was pretty much what the you know, what our goal here is to not, I mean, we have three great maps for Halo 2 Anniversary with you know, Sanctuary, Lockout, and Warlock. Mm-hmm. Right? Like those are already three great maps.
Three good competitive maps.
Exactly. And I mean, there were even like rumbles of people talking about including Ascension in there, you know, as a or Pinnacle, whatever you want to call it, you know, including Zenith, right? It has like 50 names, including that into the rotation, maybe with some tweaks, right? To make the map flow better. But that is a debate for another day. I don't think that's going to happen. But like I said, the goal is to have not only the game types be something that the top players, as well as the casual players, can enjoy, but the maps, which I think is a big thing, the settings at which these people play their games. So yeah, that's the idea.
Right. It's going to be interesting to see what kind of maps people are going to come up with, whether it's going to be remakes of some of the classic competitive maps, or if we're going to see some new ones. I would personally like to see some new designs, just with how how more built out the Forge system is and just how awesome it looks. I mean, Certain Affinity has done a fantastic job, and they actually, just before recording this, they released a new video on their YouTube channel going through and discussing the scripting system in detail, which I think that adds a whole interesting other element to Halo that you can finally use in Forge. And I think that kind of opens up possibilities for a lot of custom game types. And I know this isn't kind of on the competitive realm, but it would be interesting to see competitive possibly do some of those one-sided objectives, because I absolutely loved Assault High Ground or Capture the Flag, One Flag on High Ground. And those are some pretty intense matches.
Yeah, that was something that was talked about. We're going to make sure that we're doing things that the, you know, pro community or the top players want to compete in.
Right.
And who knows, maybe mixing things up. Like, I think like adding bomb in there, like neutral bomb on Sanctuary was like a big change. It hasn't been used in like a really long time. So it was kind of cool to see that brought back, although it was a tad bit slow. But I think that's kind of like the idea, right? It's hey, let's try some new things. You know, let's see if we can get some things in Halo that people have never seen before, and how can we make it work for competitive, right? And at the same time, also bring it in for, you know, a casual player and see if they dig it. So yeah, there's just a lot of flexibility. Halo's always allowed for that flexibility because of, you know, being able to just set the maps, and then these guys are able to take the maps and put them right into the matchmaking hopper. So I think it's pretty cool, and you know, we'll see what happens with that.
Right. As far as some of the like the top teams go, we got to see a good selection of them at the Invitational, and you got to cast that. So what was kind of your feel of how the pros were really taking the Master Chief Collection? Was it something that they felt familiar with that was kind of similar to Halo 2, or did it feel something that a lot of people are going to have to start getting used to this game again as a new game for the Halo franchise?
Yeah, well, so it all depends on like who you ask, right? Some pros would say it feels like Halo 2, you know, a little modernized, but it feels like Halo 2. Other people would say it feels like a, you know, like a heavily modified version of Halo 4, right? And there's, you know, there's always that kind of like back and forth. A lot of the top players, though, so one of my worries was, you know, like, are the top players going to be okay with playing Halo 2 Anniversary? And it turns out most of them, like, are completely fine with it. Actually, I think all of them are fine with it. You know, like, I think they only care about, yeah, I think they only care about competing, right? They just want to compete and play. And for them, you know, Halo 2 Anniversary is, regardless of the facts, still very much the core Halo experience, right? So it's not really an issue there. And it makes sense for 343 to push it because this is the game that they designed, you know, along with like Certain Affinity and Saber. And, you know, it made sense. So I think that regardless of whether pros dug it or not, it wasn't really going to matter because Halo 2 Anniversary was always going to be the game. I saw a lot of people debate and saying like, oh, you know, they should use H3, they should use H2 Classic. And don't get me wrong, I love those games. I mean, I play them. In Master Chief Collection, I'm playing Customs with my friends in those games, those particular games all the time. But I'm also realistic in that, you know, one, Halo 2 Anniversary, not a bad game by any means whatsoever. So anyone who claims it's like Halo 4, you know, like 0.5 or 4.5, whatever.
4.5,
like, yeah. Yeah, it's absolutely like uncalled for because it is at its core. It's core Halo. It's, you know, what people grew up playing, right? Yeah. I think the shooting is a little different in comparison to Halo 2, Halo 2 Classic. But then again, that's not really a bad thing. Top players are still top players. You know, like certain things don't really play much of a factor. I know a lot of people also complaining about the hit markers and the nade indicators. And it's like, you know, I get it, right? I get the people complaining about that. But really, what does it matter at this point? Like, it doesn't hamper the experience. It's ruin it, right? Like, imagine if you put Sprint on Halo 2. You know, like, or there was no D-scope on Halo 2. Like, that really ruins the Halo 2 experience. But everything is pretty much as you remember it for Halo 2 Anniversary, and it works for competitive. And with Forge and all that, it really helps out to balance things out. And personally, I'm very excited to see, you know, how the pros play, because I've been watching a lot of streams, like Ninja and Snipedown especially, and my goodness, it's just, they're, you know, like the way that they're moving around the maps and, you know, the new map elements that have been put in there. Like on Warlock, you have the new jump ups to the flag, and on Sanctuary, you have the jump ups, rocks in the courtyards on opposite sides. Like, it's actually really cool to see them really work the map, geometry. And it's been, I guess it's kind of added some flavor into the mix.
It's good to see some of the variety get utilized. I know that was one of the things that, while I was watching the Invitational, for Lockdown, the stalactites didn't get used as much. There was a few times where they did get used, though. So I think it's taking just a little time for some players just to get used to the new elements, but I think people are starting to pick up on them really quickly, and they don't seem to be breaking map flow too much. I think it's kind of one of those extra elements where it's like, if you can utilize it right, then you might be able to get the surprise on people, but I think people are going to pick them up pretty quickly and be able to kind of use them and account for them whenever they're there.
Yeah, I think, like, out of all the maps, Lockdown is the one with the more drastic change, because you actually have things that can kill you.
Right.
And players have kind of just kept good at, you know, like, hey, I see stalactites, I'm just going to shoot it, right? And that's basically it. You know, at that point, it's done. And I thought that the glass breaking bottom middle or top middle to bottom middle would change the flow of the map, like, you know, for the worst, and actually didn't. It did not cause any problems. It was good to watch. I mean, Team Slayer on that one was really slow, but and I think that it's definitely going to be altered a little bit. What I do find particularly funny is that, you know, first day Lockout Team Slayer, first day of the launch invitation, we didn't have Astral Listenings. They weren't set up yet. And we were obviously concerned about, you know, this is like a high level event. A lot of people, Microsoft execs are going to be there.
Yeah.
Lots of people were watching.
Families were
concerned, right? Yeah. We were concerned about foul language and all that stuff. And the goal was just to get the matches, you know, done. And unfortunately, you know, the day went long. But I feel like day two, we really hit our stride with those listen-ins, and they really added a lot to the intensity. Like that push that Straight Ripping had to Sniper Tower in the finals was fantastic. It was so awesome hearing Roy talk to Walshy and T-Squared about, like, you know, should I take sniper top middle and then push it over to snipe? Like, you know, should I do this? And like hearing kind of like the conversation flow there, I feel like that is where listen-ins are truly going to thrive, right? As opposed to, which I can completely understand people's cases for and against it, when it's like mid-game, an intense matchup, and you just hear them like yelling, screaming. And, you know, and people are like, huh, what's going on here?
All the incoherent blabber and everything.
Yeah.
It's weird because you have to be trained just to hear it. And I know for a lot of those teams, they've played together. They can differentiate what each other are saying. And when you're just watching from behind the screen and hearing that, sometimes you might not be able to pick up on it.
Yeah. To some people, to the average viewer, that just sounds like noise. Right. It just sounds like noise and four people with maybe a coach behind them just yelling at each other. But I feel like those instances, and I think that's where listen-ins really were valuable, was when you had those draws and you had these players talking to each other. Right. Because that's when you hear that kind of dialogue, it's so rewarding for one as a caster, because you get a lot of stuff to feed off of when you come back from that break.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also just, you know, rewarding for the audience to learn how are these guys communicating in this kind of situation, because everyone's encountered that, right? You're playing a game of Lockout on, you know, Halo 2, or you're playing a pit on Halo 3. It's, you know, 48-48 or it's 40-40. What do you do, right? How do you approach this? And you're playing with your friends and you're talking about pushing forward. What are you going to do? How do you make this happen? Where do I move? And that intensity that's there, I think, is second to none. It's something that very few games bring to the table. It's one of the reasons why high-level Halo is so entertaining to watch.
Right. Even when you have a 3-game set of game 2 on the finals, where it's you get ties over and over again, and it's tense though.
Oh yeah.
Even when they're talking in very low tones, but they're still communicating. They're still trying to point stuff out. But even those tense moments are still kind of high intensity, and it's really interesting to see how when teams get into those kind of situations, whether it's low profile standoff like that or it's high intensity where stuff is flying all over the place, just to get the energy from all those guys as they're coordinating and they're really trying to use the map and have map control is just something that's really awesome. And I think it's one of the reasons why it's probably one of the more entertaining esports to watch.
Exactly. I couldn't agree with you more, man. It's a great game to watch. I think a lot of people are really going to dig not only the Gfinity event this weekend, but they're also where they get the CEU players competing. But I think they're also going to love Iron Gaming. I think the storylines going into Iron Gaming, too, is incredible, right? Like having the whole, you know, like who's going to come out on top, right? You have this this team with CLG that STK had a great run at the Launch Invitational, but just couldn't quite, you know, close it out, and you know, only to then, you know, find out like these guys are, you know, this is CLG, this is Counter Logic Gaming. Is Roy and Royal 2 and Snakebite, are they going to perform? But then you also have the Evil Genius storyline with new team, a potential God Squad in the making here. You know, you have three of the most winningest players in. Well, actually, I should say correct that four of the most winningest players. But you have the three members of that God Squad back in the day, I believe, in Reach with Instinct. And then you're just adding Snipe down to the mix, who's regarded as one of the best snipers in the game. And, you know, one of the most naturally talented players, you know, as well, who had an amazing PAX Prime. So, you know, there's going to be some great storylines going into this event. There's even more down the line that I can't really talk about right now. You guys will learn it pretty soon. It's gonna be fun, man. Like I think this year, this first season, I should say, is gonna be very intense, and it's gonna be a great building block for the HCS moving forward to the next seasons, as well as moving forward into Halo 5, which is gonna be, you know, it's gonna be massive.
It's gonna be crazy.
Because I generally think one of the best things for me from seeing all these, like, they really feel like franchises are popping up. You know, you got the Evil Geniuses. And what I see is where League of Legends and COD have really pushed forward, like, and made themselves so big, is franchises have set up. And the problem with all, like, the teams that have passed in Halo Reach and Halo 4, they kept splitting up and changing their name again and again and again. But when you get the franchises setting up, you know, you're really going to feel like you're locked into a team for the whole year. And, you know, that's why I think it's really going to help Halo progress.
I hope so.
Sorry about that. Yeah, no, I agree. I agree with you. You know, one thing I do want to point out is having these organizations coming into the scene really speaks volumes for the quality that people are expecting here with Halo. And again, it's a franchise as itself. It's a franchise that is, you know, it's absolutely massive. Has a great following, dedicated following, and can, you know, do some amazing things, right? And I feel like it hasn't really been given that opportunity to do that yet, right? In the last couple of years, especially. Like back in the MLG days, yeah, you know, it was definitely there, but there were other issues that stemmed, you know, issues I'd rather not get into, but I feel like now there's opportunity here to be able to really expand upon this. And it's going to be a slow moving process, right? Similar to Call of Duty. I mean, Call of Duty took forever to actually, you know, get into that esports. I mean, that esports point. I remember before Call of Duty events stopped broadcasting on Twitch, you know, they were hitting 50,000, you know, nearing 60,000. And there were, and that is, you know, a huge indicator of the growth that Call of Duty was having little by little. It was something that was going, you know, and then now, of course, you know, MLG, doing what they're doing with Call of Duty, that natural progression was always going to be there because the community, the players, the fans, everyone's getting more invested, right? Which is a great thing, a fantastic thing. As someone who comes from that background, I couldn't be happier for one of my communities I'm very close to. But looking at Halo, there's no reason why that same kind of thought process can't be there. It's going to take time. It's going to be, you know, there's going to be ups and downs, but there's no doubt in my mind that this isn't going to be able to grow exponentially. And there's a lot of hardworking people who want to make this happen. So it's going to be, it's a great time. Next year is going to be fun. It's going to be a fun time.
I'm really looking forward to next really year.
This really feels like a fresh start. I mean, we've had great memories over the past, you know, 5-6 years with all that's happened about Halo Reach, Halo 4, not so much. But this feels like this is a new chance. You know, we're starting back with Halo 2 as well. So who knows what we're going to happen with Halo 5 in the future. But this is Halo's time to push forward. And, you know, I'm not going to say front runner because, you know, who can say what numbers we're going to get in the future. But this is a real fresh start for us. And
yeah,
I'm really looking forward to it.
And I think that a lot of people shouldn't necessarily concern themselves with the number. Right. I'll worry about that. You know what I mean? I know a lot of people are anxious about it, but I'll take the brunt of that burden. Right. My goal is, how can we present and create some of the best events working with up and coming and well-established tournament organizers from all across the world? And also, how can we tell a mature and cohesive narrative for Halo Esports? That's the goal. That's the game plan. And I think we're kind of hitting, we're going to start hitting those notes, right? The rule set just came out. ESL put it out there. And another thing too is, you know, this is for any person who is interested in running a Halo event, right? I mean, you can come in and host a Halo event at multiple levels. It's not just for guys who can host events at $20,000 prize pools or $40,000 prize pools. Like, you have a local event going on, you can host a Halo HCS event for points. You know, like, you could do that. It's not impossible. And all it really takes is just reaching out, right? Reaching out to someone like myself. Hey, I'm an event organizer. I have this, and this. This is what I want to do. And then we get the conversation going from there, right? We're dedicated to the growth of grassroots and well-established organizations through Halo, because we know that the potential is there for some incredibly wonderful things. So again, it's going to take time. I hope everyone is patient with it. And again, the excitement is definitely brewing within. I can't wait until we really start to hit our stride. I felt like the launch invitational was a good indication as to where we can go. And I know we can just go farther.
I definitely think you guys can. We've seen a big success with Halo with MLG, and there's no reason why it can't be done again with the Halo Championship Series. And I could see it possibly getting back up there. To have something that's officially sanctioned by the governing body of Halo, which is 343 Industries, that's something that we haven't had before. We've always had to rely on third parties, but now since we have this, I think there's going to be a lot more of a chance for Halo Esports to thrive and really do well.
Yeah.
I don't know if the prize pools are ever going to amount up to maybe what it has been in the past, but maybe over time. Given,
it's definitely something that, you know, I mean, Call of Duty, they were playing for $20,000 for, you know, a really long time. I mean, even the event I think going on this weekend for MLG is, or I think it's this weekend, I don't know when, I think it might be next weekend, apologies. I think that one is going for $25,000, right? It's an open event, which makes sense. You know, they have their final structure and all that stuff, right? And that's the thing. So the events all lead up to something, right? This isn't just like, hey guys, play for points and, you know, make a little money, right? That's not the game plan here. The game plan is to create, again, like this narrative across multiple events, telling this story, having these guys working together and, you know, racking up points until the finals, which has not been announced yet. And I don't have much more information to divulge because it's not 100% confirmed yet. But you know, that's the whole game plan here. And I think the prize money is fine where it's at right now. I think UGC is going to be $20,000. I think Iron Gaming's currently at $10,000. You never know, that can, you know, increase. Who knows? I'm not positive, but I think you know, Gfinity is hosting their events for, you know, a couple thousand pounds. There's definitely room there for improvement, But again, because this is season one and we're really trying to get things off the ground here, I think we're at a safe point and we'll just see where it goes, right? Or just keep track of it, see what the players want, see what the fans want, see what makes sense for business as well, because regardless, this is a business and people need to make money off of this. Of course, I would love to be able to run $40,000, $50,000 Halo events like every single month, but you know, that's not realistic at this point. But again, no doubt in my mind that we can achieve that, you know, later on. So, of course, there's always things to be hopeful for. I mean, you know, ever upward, right? That's the game plan.
We just need to win the lottery and go for it.
Yeah, pretty much, right? I'll win the lottery, get a couple hundred grand, right? Put about 100 aside and just run Halo events for the next like 3-4 months.
There you go.
But yeah, you know, but that's something that, you know, obviously I know was brought up before. But I think we're at a good point and we're just going to continue to progress from here.
That's awesome. A couple of things that you mentioned, the whole having local LAN tournaments, that's going to be interesting to see how that builds out. Cause I know that there's going to be a lot of the big names out there. So UGC, Iron Gaming, and a lot of those tournament organizers are going to probably be the big heavy hitters. But with that being said, it's going to be interesting to see kind of a grassroots movement for a lot of these smaller things that might be able to kind of help crop up. And I guess we'll get more information on how the HCS points will actually kind of be divvied up between some of the bigger events and some of the smaller ones. But if there's ways for some of the smaller venues to really get in there, that might actually foster some new Halo talent. And that would be cool to get into the mix, because it's nice to see a lot of the kind of classic Halo pros be up there and watch them play. But I know kind of going from Halo 3 to Halo Reach, we did see some new talent in there. And for a while, we actually got to see highlight of new talent and just see people kind of adapt to the new style of play until some of the pro players kind of finally caught up and kicked it out. So it'd be nice to actually see some new people get into the mix.
Yeah, and right now you're going to see a lot of the familiar faces because that's what makes sense, right?
And they're the ones that can make it. I think they're the ones that can make it to the bigger events because they're sponsored and everything. But if you can, given that some of these smaller events can grant HCS points to teams, they go to enough small events, they might be able to get into some of the bigger events and get those sponsorships and continue to build it, almost like a sports league in the sense. You have kind of like you have the minor leagues, major leagues, and then you have the professional leagues, just kind of work that ladder and slowly get to see some more talent for Halo pop up. And like you said, I think this is a good chance for Halo to kind of slowly grow in the esports scene again. I think we kind of lost a lot of momentum from Halo Reach and Halo 4, which unfortunately didn't have great competitive Halo support and got dropped by MLG. But I think this is a good chance to kind of help relaunch the competitive scene for Halo. And really down the line in 2 or 3 years, we might see a big resurgence back of people trying to compete and just have multiple channels, multiple streamers, multiple tournaments that can really grow the esports scene for Halo.
That's the my grand vision, right? And the cool part about this plan is that it's very flexible. You know, let's say, for example, there are no smaller tourneys that want to host Halo events, and it really kind of just falls on, you know, like the Iron Gamings, UMGs, UGCs, you know, these kinds of guys, right? ESL, etc. You know, the system can, you know, be flexible to compensate for that, right? Mm-hmm. But if, let's say, we do end up getting a resurgence of local tournaments, and, you know, there's one weekend going on in the East Coast, one going on in the Midwest, one going on in the West Coast, right? That could be a possibility as well. So it's not possible for this to be a thing. It's also a very flexible plan that can foster growth in multiple ways. Our mission here is to create an experience that is inclusive or that is open. For example, we have the online events, right? So, you know, in other systems, You know, it's online is a very key thing. But you have to pay to enter. And, you know, and it's skewed heavily, right? Alongside with live events, to the point where they're so critical that you like have to pay and play in them, right? We know that Halo wouldn't benefit from that right now because the scene needs to grow organically. And honestly, I don't even think that it should ever be something that has some, you know, a point of stoppage for players to be able to enjoy and compete and have fun. So that's why all the ESL events, all the ESL online events that go on every Sunday are free. They're all free. And they have a cash prize too. So it's not like you're wasting your time. And that was something that took a lot of, you know, I guess, discussion and back and forth about it. Not in a sense where, no. Actually, people were very open to it from the beginning. That was the game plan from the beginning. Yeah. The game plan for it being free, that was an idea that I had alongside with Bravo and Ernest Lee, as well as Che Chow and the ESL guys too. Like everyone was like, yeah, man, we should open this up and allow people to be able to just have some fun and play, right? Online is going to be important, but live events are going to be just as important. But of course, if we're seeing that, you know, the online, it's skewing heavily, we can easily, again, adjust a plan moving into season 2, 3 and beyond. And I think that is, again, speaks to the flexibility of what we're doing with the HCS. It's not something that's going to be bound by just one, you know, one thing, right? I mean, it's not going to be bound by just, you know, you having to pay all this much to enter to just say like, hey, I compete in an HCS event. I mean, you know, you're already paying $60 for the game. Why should you be paying money to enter into tournaments for points for the game, right? So I think that was kind of like a big point of discussion amongst everyone. And it was nice to see everyone kind of be on the same page with that and say like, yeah, we want to create a sense of openness and fairness for everyone involved. Now I just hope players play in them. That's really what it boils down to, right? We just want people to play in the tournaments.
Right. And that's going to be good. I think that's a direction that will be very good for Halo Esports. One other thing I kind of wanted to touch on before we kind of move on to the content update is one of the things I kind of have talked about. I think it was a long, long time ago on the show back when we were discussing AGL, but it would be interesting to see kind of regional tournaments kind of pop up. So you would have European leagues pop up. You'd have an East Coast league, a West Coast league, a Southern league for the States, that kind of stuff. And it'd be interesting to see kind of regions pop up and then like every year have, it's kind of like the Big 12 for for like in sports or like March Madness kind of stuff, having all these different regions come in and then play in like a Master Grand Finals kind of thing. I think that would be cool to see if the HCS could ever get to that kind of point where you have a lot of these regional tournaments and then that kind of feeds into a greater thing in the end.
Yeah, that the thing about doing something like that. So esports is very unique, right? To me, and I don't know if other people would agree with this, I don't like the idea of us trying to replicate professional sports because we're not sports. We're video games. We're you know, electronic sports, right? Competitive gaming. I kind of, although esports is regarded as a widely known term amongst marketing and sales and, you know, industry folk, I prefer the term competitive gaming, right? And that's what we are. I don't like the idea of everyone trying to replicate sports. I just don't see the value in it. It's like, why don't we just try and be us? That's why I like what League of Legends is doing, right? With you know, and they're, and I guess you could say, yes, they're definitely trying to replicate sports, but they also know their audience and they know what they are, and they are a video game. So it's like, I kind of, it's weird because I see their productions and I mean, they're some of the best productions I'd ever seen, you know, period. But they're not, how do I put it? They're not trying to be something that they're not. Right. And if there was anything to make a case for being a sport, it'd be League of Legends, right? Just because of how far it's come.
Yeah.
and how massive it is. But I like the idea of what Dota is doing too, or what Valve is doing with Dota. I think it's a great idea. I mean, Valve has a very, you know, I guess, how do I put it, standoff approach. They're not really involved in a lot of things besides their international event, which is huge. But they have all these other different kind of things pop up and let the community kind of decide where they want to consume content, where the pros want to compete and also distribute their content. And I think that's, you know, I think that's pretty cool to that degree. I like the idea of differing takes in esports. I don't like the idea of, you know, like being like a sports league, right? Are there benefits to it? Yes, there are. And it probably works for some games. It doesn't work for others. But that's why I kind of like what we're doing here, because it opens the floodgates for us to embrace the culture of video games. And one of my favorite aspects of competitive gaming slash esports is that it's, you know, it's a more of a social experience than one would imagine, right? I mean, you know, where else are you going to go for a weekend and hang out with your friends, compete in some games, watch some games, meet your favorite players? I mean, it's a unique experience. You don't really get that anywhere else. And I want to continue to maintain that, right? Whether it's, you know, the way we're doing it now or in some other fashion down the line. But I think that's the building blocks there, to be able to stay true to what we are, while at the same time trying to introduce some new things to. And hey, you know what? My opinion differs from many other people. It could, you know, there's some people who probably disagree with me saying like, hey, it should be sports. Or some people are saying, no, it's video games. Keep it that way. Hey, that's a beautiful thing, man. Everyone has an opinion. Everyone can share it. And, you know, we'll just see where it naturally progresses to. And that's the key. It's nothing here is being forced. Nothing here is, you know, kind of getting shoved down your throat. It's a natural progression for competitive Halo. And that's what this community needed desperately.
Yeah.
Because I think that's one of the key things that hasn't happened before. Because like you said, with League of Legends, that's, you know, that's a publisher that driven. It's driven by Riot Games. You said Valve with Dota. These are all developer and publisher driven. And that's obviously we never had with Halo before. Now we do with 343. I feel like it has changed. I feel it's going to be better because it's developer driven rather than just another company taking over.
And to add on to that point, by the way, which is a great point, you know, this is something that's never been done before by a console developer publisher. Maybe the Capcom Pro Tour, but the thing about the Capcom Pro Tour, and people will laugh at me about this, I have nothing but respect and love for the fighting game scene and community and everything. But it's like, I just feel like, you know, Street Fighter is not a console game. I always view it as an arcade game, and it's always kind of lived like that in my head. Although I know that they're playing it on consoles and stuff, I feel like, you know, a Street Fighter tournament can easily be done on a computer and can be done on a cabinet, can be done on a Xbox or a PS3 or PS4, so on and so forth. But that's just like, you know, a side note there. But I would say like to create like a sanctioning body and this kind of content centered around it, it's something that truly has not been done before. And especially for a first person shooter, right? It's never been done before. So this is all new ground here that 343 as well as Microsoft are undertaking. And again, it's going to be tough. You know, we as in Twitch are working very closely with them to make sure that everything's with not only within the best interests of the community, but also for the players and, you know, for the viewers, because that's what we profess in. And it's just it's a fun time because we're all learning as we go, right? Season one could be really great and we may not need to make many changes going into the next season, or season one could be what it is and we just have to make adjustments for season two. Like and again, the plan is flexible to allow those kinds of things. And it's just a very unique experience.
Well, that's awesome to hear. And I know I can't wait to see what's going to go on for this first season and all the events that are going to come up. I know I won't be able to get to many, if not any of them, but I'll definitely be watching the streams and trying to catch all the changes that are going on from team rosters and all that stuff. I've never been too heavily invested in competitive, but we've always kind of followed it kind of at arm's distance. But seeing how much potential the HCS has, I think it's going to be worth trying to keep on top of this stuff a lot more.
Yeah. I think the way you looked at it, it was kind of like a separate entity. You know, you had your social gamers and you had your competitive gamers. Now they're so close, they're going to be so much closely interlinked that I think that is the way they're going with it. They want the social gamers to just pay attention to this, to HCS, and that way, you know, that's where you grow.
Yeah, and then I think, you know, on our end at Twitch, a major thing for us is to be able to grow these players and their personalities and their, you know, their popularity, right? Their fan bases. And the game being inclusive for all audiences, for, you know, people who want to compete or people who just want to watch others compete, is very crucial to, you know, and I think that's one of the things, and it's been repeated so many times before, it's one of the things that made League of Legends so amazing, is because the game you play competitively is the game you play in solo queue, right? It's that was something that really stood out, and it was a problem that Halo had for a really long time, where it was a very niche thing. I mean, hell, even Call of Duty had that problem for a very long time. You know, like before Black Ops, no one would have ever dreamed of including score streaks into the mix. But, you know, it worked. It worked well for competitive, and it made for one of the best experiences in competitive gaming. You know, I haven't, for Call of Duty, I haven't felt that since. So I think that is kind of the takeaway from here. How do we create something that, you know, anyone can participate in and also enjoy? So again, we'll see how it goes.
Cool. So let's go ahead and kind of move on to the content update that came out yesterday as this recording, which was Thursday. There's been some mixed results from what I've seen on Twitter. A lot of people are saying that they've had a lot of fixes, that they're able to get into games, they're able to join up with people, and there are a lot of people that are saying it's still broken. So as far as this content update goes, has it changed for any of you guys? I know for me, some things seem to be working faster, but there's still some major issues, at least on my end.
Yeah, I mean, I've been able to get into games a lot quicker. I can, like, within like a minute, I can get in a game. I don't know if that has any reflection on anything, but I've been getting into Halo 2 matches a lot. Like, I don't know if it's just because people are voting it, but like, it seems like the Halo 2 matches are coming in faster than like if I go with like the big team or something like that. Like, they take a lot longer. But another thing that I can't really do is I can't get into like custom games. Like, if I try joining in somebody that's going to be able to like, that they're going to want to go into matchmaking with, I can't join them. So that's kind of the thing I'm on right now.
I mean, it is the party system that is genuinely the thing that I think is annoying people most, that they cannot play with their friends at the moment outside of custom games. And as you said, you can't even do that. You know, people get Halo because they want to play with their friends. You want to play a single player, you know, play multiplayer on your own, not to say, but you play poorly, play COD. But if you want to play with your friends, you play Halo. And, you know, when people can't do that, they get angry and they lash out. But, you know, it's certainly fixed a few things for me. You know, I'm able to find games and matchmaking on my own better. And I was able for the first time to find a game with my friends. It only happened once and we got kicked out again from the party as soon as we got back. That happens. But, you know, it did fix a few things, but still a lot of work in my mind that needs to happen.
Right.
Yeah, I guess I could, if I don't mind, if you don't mind.
No, go for it.
I had a unique experience last night because it did find me a bunch of games, but it was very weird. And I tweeted about this, and it's funny. So to give some context to this, people think that, you know, because I've done a lot of work with 343 and, you know, yada yada, that I'm getting like paid off by them to not say anything bad.
That doesn't surprise me.
Everybody has been saying that about a lot of streamers and YouTubers lately.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's like you're getting paid off. You know, like, you're not pointing out any other flaws. It's like, you know, the truth is, you know, like my experience, like, for example, I had like I wouldn't say heated because I didn't let it escalate anymore, but like Ray from Beyond Siren, he was particularly angry at me because of the experience that I had playing. And I was just pointing out, like, you know what, man, there's no reason for me. Like, they already know what the problems are. The internet's made that abundantly clear. Me complaining does nothing.
Exactly. Because
it doesn't do anything to rush them to get they're working, I'm sure, as hard as they can. And yeah, you know what? It shouldn't have happened in the beginning. It sucks. It is what it is. Life moves on. I don't know what more I could potentially do. I'm going to wait. Like, I see a bunch of people saying, I'm going to return my game and show them. And it's like, all right. I mean, if you do that, cool. But what happens when the game is fixed? You want to play some Halo and now you got to go buy the game again. Right? Like, I mean, I don't know. And I understand that. I understand the arguments there. But anyway, you know, I guess we can get to that in a little bit. But just in regards to my experience, I was finding games quicker. But the hilarious part was that I was playing in the HCS playlist and I got lumped into the first one was a 7-on-7 one flag CTF game on Zanzibar, which was like, wow, which was wild. H2, which again, no complaints. I freaking love Zanzibar, but it's like I can totally understand if it's like a hardcore gate or like person who's just like, I don't want to do this, you know, like I get it, whatever. And then the next one was, I don't know what this map was in Halo 4. It was like horrendous, but it was another like 7-on-7. Actually, this one was like 8-on-6. And then the seventh or eighth person left and it became a 7-on-6 game of H4 big team Slayer on some giant ass map with mechs walking around everywhere. And you know what, man? It was like, I played it, whatever. What the hell am I supposed to do? Like, I'm sure they know about it. You know, I actually DM'd it directly to Bravo. I was like, hey, just so you know, I kind of got, you know, this setup here. This was a tad bit awkward. He was like, yeah, you know, like he just responded like, we know, we're looking into it. Like, you know, you can't get them to work any quicker than what they're doing right now. Again, right. I understand all the gripes, but again, me complaining is nothing.
They know what's going on. You know what I mean? Like, they didn't plan for this to happen. You know, it's great. People are going to be complaining from their own experiences, but it's like, what can they can only work so much. You know, they can only work as fast as they can. And the thing is, people need to take into consideration. It's like you said before, griping about it and just completely going off on 343 about it isn't helping anything. It's not going to get anything accomplished. It really isn't.
I think a lot of the stuff that stems from the frustration with the Master Chief Collection is that there was so much hype behind it. And a lot of people were really excited that Halo 2 was going to have a comeback with Halo 2 Anniversary and that we were getting a completely remastered campaign, which it's still, the campaign is awesome. I actually haven't had many problems with campaign for the Master Chief Collection, except when trying to connect to Beowulf. But other than that, it just seems like, I mean, a lot of people are rightfully frustrated, but like you guys said, being or lashing out isn't going to help anything. And the best thing that we can do in this time right now is just keep on listing out all the issues that are being there and don't berate or belittle the developers. And I've seen a lot of hate on Twitter to like for Halo and for 343. And it's just one of those things where, yeah, it sucks that we're in this situation, but you still got to be mature about it. You're still on the internet. You still need to, I mean, if you want to return the game and speak with your wallet, that's fine. But there's no reason to disrespect a developer just because of how bad the game is.
Because, I mean, it's not just not helping. I mean, it's not just not helping. It's actually directly hurting everyone. I mean, you'll always get the people, you know, your casual people who have, like, what, 10 followers on Twitter who tweet out in anger. That's fine. But when you get it from the higher people, it's just, you just have some common sense and don't do that. Because you are hurting the game by doing that.
I mean, and that's just it right there. Initially, they're community leaders. You know, they're looked at, you know, from certain different angles. You know, if you're going to sit there and lash out at the developer, what is that going to create for the smaller people? They're like, oh, well, this guy's going to be doing it. I might as well do it too. You know, that's ruining what the community is. You know, you can't be doing that.
There's some other parts of it too where I know 343 hasn't been as open as they could be with information. And people have pointed that out before. It's one of those things where they're walking a very fine line right now of what they can discuss and what they're just trying to work at getting out the door. And it's one of those things that a lot of people just,
you know,
go ahead.
Yeah, just to kind of like piggyback off that point, right? A lot of people are frustrated with it, but I find it hilarious that when I go on R Halo, I see people saying like, we want an update. We want to know like what's going on, right? What's the deal? And they have nothing, but they give an update. They're like, hey guys, we're actively working on everything. You know, we don't have a solution right now this second. And I think there was a post that went up on Waypoint or something like that. That post gets put on our Halo. Why would they give us an update if they're not going to tell us anything? And it's like, well,
that's what you asked for.
People literally asked for this. They said, I'm okay with an update, even if it's nothing, them just saying that they hear us. Right now, people are like, oh, but I want specifics. And you're like, okay. Like, I, you know, that's a bigger problem with gaming in general and just the open internet, right? It's like people just being really like close-minded to the whole thing. Like, you know, I get it and it sucks really bad. And I mean, what more can we do? Like, they know the issues. They have statistics and data and all that stuff. I mean, the goal of the update was for people to play games quicker. That is happening. People are playing games quicker. There are other issues that are already underway and need to be addressed. They know that too. I mean, again, sucks. I hate it as a Halo fan, but you know, I'm a Halo fan. I'm not going to go and, you know, just refund my game because I, you know, like I'm angry.
Right.
Like, I'll just not play. And if it's ready and it's ready, then I'll play. And I just hope that the community does the same thing. But of course, you know, I'm being paid off by 343. So what do I know?
And apparently for me, I'm wanting to keep my invitations to events. I got accused of that yesterday too.
But just so we know, how much would they need to pay you? No, theoretically, how much would they need to pay you? I mean, just so we have a number.
I have no idea.
Him to host tournaments and not have to work.
So as we said earlier, 100,000. We need 200,000, 100,000.
Full salary, you know.
Benefits.
Little bonuses on the side. Benefits for me and my wife. That would be a start. Yeah.
I think that's fair. I think the people who are listening and they're taking that into account now.
Yeah, there you go.
You can expect your next paycheck in the month.
Yeah, right. Paychecks in the mail right now.
So if you take a look at this whole thing, though, there's not many people that truly understand what's going on. And for us being on the outside, you probably know more stuff than a lot of us here do, Golden Boy. But when it comes to development for a game that's this big of an undertaking, there's bound to be problems. And a lot of people don't understand or get a full depth of understanding of what's going on behind the scenes, what could be the issue. It could have been something that Microsoft was pushing on 343 to have it out by this date. It could be something internally with 343. It's like, no, we have to meet this. Like, there's a bunch of variables with what could have been the big issue with the Master Chief Collection not being ready on launch. It could have been something that during testing on their internal stuff, a lot of the stuff checked out fine, but then when it hit the production Xbox Live, things shit the bed. There's a lot of things.
That's how it is, actually.
And there's just a lot of things that you can't account for. And granted, it's something that being Halo fans like we are, it sucks to see. But the best thing that we can do about it is kind of just sit back, ask the questions, what's going on? Can you tell us what's going on? And just giving feedback to them is like, I'm saying this wrong. And they'll get to it. They're listening. If 343 has shown anything over the last year, is that they're listening and that they care about the community. Whether or not they're delivering on that is another story, but they are trying their best to get us the Halo experience that we want to see from them. And it just sucks right now to not see that.
Because that's what's annoying me mostly about people like bashing 343. And I know one of the things I've been seeing is that they're saying, oh, they're a young company, they don't know what they're doing, why the hell did Microsoft give Halo 343? And I'm looking at the fact that, okay, yeah, they're a young company, but I'm also looking at the other games that have just recently come out, like Assassin's Creed Unity, made by Ubisoft. Boy. Really young company, yeah. They're having problems. Rockstar had the same problems that GTA 5 just got released. It's just the fact that these companies have problems. Every game will have problems.
Titanfall had problems.
You will never ship a perfect game. You will never, ever, ever ship a perfect game. It's just a statistical improbability. You can't do it.
Well, to kind of piggyback on that thought, you know, and I think, again, me personally, I'm not a big fan of it because I, of course, you know, I pay $60. You know, I want it to work, right? That's how it was like back in the day. Right. It was, you know, I remember like going to a store buying Legend of Dragoon on my PS1 for my PS1. I assumed it was going to work. So I popped it into the PS1 and lo and behold, it worked. There were maybe a little couple glitches here and there, but you know, whatever. Right. Because, and I think like it's a couple things, right? For one, it's the power of the internet amplifies it so much more, right? From a community standpoint, because yeah, I'm sure that there are a lot of people who are having a good experience and just aren't saying anything because they don't care to say anything, right? And I'm sure that there are a lot of people who aren't having a good experience who aren't saying anything either. And then there's a lot of people who – or some people who aren't. Or I'm not trying to downplay people who aren't. I'm just saying that, like, you know, we don't know, like, what the numbers look like. We don't have that data in front of us. But to that other point, though, in regards to – you know, gaming as a whole and the issues with other companies, you're starting to see this more because these games are getting incredibly complex. Like, you know, really fathom the idea of the Master Chief Collection, you know, and how ridiculous this would have sounded a couple years ago when you say, hey, man, I want to create a game that it's for, you know, let's say Halo 4 didn't come out. Let's say it's around the 360. And it's like, I want to create a game that is Halo's 1, 2, 3 and Reach. And I want it so that it loads up every game, you know, in every playlist. And I could play one playlist, I could play Halo 2. The next playlist, I could play Halo CE. The next game, I could play Halo 3. So on and so forth. Someone would have laughed at you. They would have laughed at your face. They would have said, that is the most ridiculous sounding and most unrealistic thing I've ever heard. But here we are in this day and age where something like that is possible. But it's getting incredibly complex. There are a million layers to these things. Back then when people were designing, you know, 8-bit, 16-bit, 32-bit games, like the glitches and the errors were, you know, like human error and things that can easily be addressed, you know, through the bugging process. Now it's like it's becoming increasingly difficult to release a game that doesn't have issues. Because again, like you said, Dust, as soon as it hits the wild, that's when things start to fall apart. Yeah. And I hate it, but that's just where this industry is because people want more complex games. So with complex games comes complex problems.
Yep.
And that's just where it is right now. And if this past 2 weeks were any indication, this isn't going to end here. It's going to keep going. And it sucks to say like that. Should we get used to it? I don't know what the right thing here is, but it's going to be a thing.
I wouldn't necessarily say get used to it, but I would definitely say that we're going to try to get, like, if every game that's came out for next gen so far has had some major problems, like that's, it's
almost every major release has had, except for I think Titanfall, ironically enough.
Well, Titanfall actually had some issues.
Yeah, no, you're right. Titanfall did have issues. It wasn't like a completely smooth launch. You couldn't even play in a party. You couldn't even talk to people.
Right.
Destiny, you kept getting disconnected.
Yeah.
Yeah, every game has had issues. Like WWE 2K15 came out. That thing's a cluster. sorry for the language again, but it's true. It's true.
But, I mean, another part of that is not to say where you put, do the whole blame game or anything, but where do you put where's the issue really lying? Is it within Halo itself or is it within the Xbox code? Because I know a lot of the party stuff is now tied into the Xbox Live system, so that's managed there. So part of the whole party issue could be on Xbox Live side. It might be something that's completely out of control of 343 and they're having to work with Xbox Live in order to get these things set out. And that just goes back to the whole point is that we truly don't know what's going on, so pointing fingers and blaming and berating and degrading people right now does nothing to fix the problem.
Yeah, I think Xbox did say that in the early stages. Xbox said that they were doing something with their servers when Halo wasn't working too well. They said they were changing something with their servers, so it may well have been on Xbox's side.
Yeah, I mean, people, people immediately, like, if something goes wrong, people immediately want to put the blame on somebody just to say, oh, well, you screwed up. You know, and I don't, it's sad that people are doing that. Like, especially being a part of the Halo community, you want to see this thrive. You want to see it, everybody having a blast playing the game and having fun with it. But, like, when you have people out there just completely ragging on it, it just, it ruins the experience. You know, it sucks that we're having these issues. But the only thing is, it's like, when we seen with Destiny, you had all these, like, people couldn't even connect to the servers. You had all these different things. Now that the game is out, not saying that this is right, but, like, now that the game's out and people are playing, people are enjoying it. You know, people are talking a lot of good stuff about the game. And that's, it's just a matter of time when all this gets put out, you know, everything gets ironed out, all these bugs, people are going to start playing the game and having a good time, you know, and that's what's something I'm really looking forward to.
It's just, yeah, and I guess just to say real quick about that, you know, one thing I want to point out is in PC, and this is probably one of the advantages that PC is having over consoles without a doubt, is, you know, you take Steam, for example, the, you know, Steam Greenlight, right? It's,
yeah.
It's something where, like, hey, I have a game that's brand new and it needs a lot of work, but here, if you want to buy it, go ahead and buy it. And you're seeing more and more people, like, release their, like, Heroes of the Storm, for example. Good example there. People are being charged, you know, for new heroes, new skins, all that. They're buying it. It's an alpha. They're buying it, right? And they're like buying it knowing that this is what it is. Package games, and the issue that package games are having and will continue to have, is because it is a disc-based game, people are just going to expect a certain level of quality, right? You know, like a finished product. But that's just a sad reality, is that may not happen a lot now, considering how complex and how many layers these games have. It's going to be more akin to PC, where it's like you're kind of buying into something that's, you know, being built, and then when it's out in the wild, needs to be refined. Is it correct? I know, but is it a reality? Yes. And it's just something that is going to be a thing.
I think that's probably one of the best decisions I've seen with developers doing, you know, like, it's smart, because when you get the retail, you're going to be buying something, you're going to know what's going to be wrong with it. You know, it's not the finished product. They say that right there. It's going to improve the experience overall.
I think some things to really note about that too is that with how a lot of these games have launched on the Xbox One, I think a lot, or I'm hoping a lot of developers will kind of reconsider how they do some internal testing for the game, doing some load testing to make sure that whenever it gets pushed out to the street, that it's a lot more of a smoother launch now. And I mean, it's a new console. There's going to be stuff that needs to get worked out, but a lot of the argument that I've seen on Twitter is that it's the first person IP for the Xbox One. So the fact that it's probably been the title that has had the most issues out of all the launch titles so far is not a good thing for Xbox and not a good thing for Halo right now.
Mm. Yeah.
But I mean, you can have an alpha, you can have a beta, you can even have a pre-alpha to your alpha. But nothing will ever compare to when the game is released and you have millions of people logging on for the first time playing your game. Nothing will ever get you ready for that. You can't test that kind of thing. So
right.
It's always going to happen that the numbers are going to find the numbers will eventually find flaws in your game. The numbers will always do that. And the numbers may cause the flaws in your game and, you know, crash servers. We saw that with the Halo Reach beta.
Right. It's just one of those things. For now, we're going to deal with it. We'll kind of ride this one out, see where it goes. Hopefully, it won't be too long before a lot of the issues get resolved. I think if this goes on for several months where there's still some major issues, there's going to be a lot of people that probably lose their faith in 343. And that's kind of unfortunate, but right now where the game is and where Halo fans are, I think it's just kind of at that point where if you care about Halo, then kind of ride this one out, see where it goes. And if it's something down the line that, hey, you don't want to invest in doing a pre-order in the future, then don't. No one's telling you to pre-order anything. And another thing that I've seen on Twitter is a lot of people feel entitled that they deserve a error-free game when they buy a $60 game. And that's not how the market actually works. You're buying a product.
No.
And you're buying that product for what it is, regardless of how the outcome is. And it's your responsibility as a consumer to do your research. And if it's something that you're not as faithful in, then you wait for the reviews and then you make your purchase decision afterwards.
Well, you know, to that degree, it's like, again, I kind of disagree, but I also understand. So I disagree in the sense where, you know, to go back to that point, right? The conception or not the concept, the perception, excuse me, the right. perception, you know, big words with, with a box disc based product is that it's going to work because that has right. been known.
Well, and it right? should.
It should theoretically. But then you have PC, which is able to get away with those things because they present it as such. Now, you will never, ever, ever see a AAA publisher present their game as a pay for beta. You will never see that happen, right? Maybe, at least not in disc form. Maybe one day, like who knows, right? As we're entering into a digital age where people are starting to embrace digital downloads. Me personally, I'm still buying my copies. I'm still yes. buying my games, right? Because that's my jam. You know, that's my bread and butter. I have a whole thing behind me. It's beautiful. Looks wonderful. Looks great on stream. And I want to keep it that way.
And I love the feel of discs. Discs
yeah. And I love discs. Exactly. yeah. Right. It's like you grab, I have my copy of Far Cry 4 in my hand right now. And it's like, yes, I have my copy of Far Cry 4. Know, right.
Sure,
like
I'm fed up with people cool. just saying it's like, I'm downloading it. Like, why? I want to feel it. I want to look at it. I don't want to say, oh, look, there it is on my console. I have to turn it on to have a look at it. I want to see it next to me. I want to go, there you are, Halo Master Collection.
exactly.
I like yeah. seeing you whilst I'm playing you.
Yeah,
I own you.
Yeah, exactly.
I own you.
Exactly. The thing is, it's like, I'd rather have something that I can actually hold and like just the fact that it's like, it's here. Like, it'd be like, oh, you want something here? I can give it to you right there. Having it digital, it's like, it's on the box. You can't see it. It's not as satisfying. It really isn't.
But the sad truth is, guys, where it's going is it's all going to a digital download.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're going to get to a point in time where there's going to be more incentives for you to digitally download. Because think about this. They make so much more money off of digital downloads than they do off of disc-based games. You want to know why? Because I'm being charged
production.
$60 for a digital download. The same price that I'm being charged for a disc-based game. So the reason why it's $60 is because of manufacturing costs, development costs, things like that, right? That makes sense. But I'm still being charged $60 for yeah. a digital download, the same as a person who got a physical copy. So the day when digital downloads become cheaper than physical copies, I'll actually purchase digital download, right? And I'm sure that day will come around where they give you exclusives for downloading digital, where they give you a price cut for downloading digital. I'm sure that's going to be the case. But to that point, though, again, because of the nature and how it's being presented to you, it's what you expect. But I guarantee you, if this was a PC release, right, where you downloaded the game and it was only something you could find on PC, like let's say it was, you know, perfect example. Let's say it was Sims, right? The Sims had some issues, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They fixed it. People accepted it. They're still playing it, right? Life moves on for them. But for us, it's like, I bought this game. It's real. It's in my hands. It should work. And because that's something that we've all grown up with.
Yeah.
So there's just the industry and the way things are being done. It's so different now. Games are not done out of the box. Content is being held off for the sake of, you know, DLC, and, you know, content's being designed as day one DLC. They're, like, all the nature of this industry from what it was in the PS2 Xbox days or PS3 Xbox days are over. You know, it's a new era, and this is, for like it or not, this is where it is going.
Yeah. I mean, another perk, and this doesn't have anything to do with video games, but like what people are starting to get, you can get early access to like movies and stuff now. That way you don't have to wait for that. You know, if you want to watch it right there and then, you can just sit there and download it and watch it or stream it. You know, instead of waiting for that copy, which people rather have holding in their hands and buying it from the store, you can just get yeah. it early. So that's something, like you said, the digital age is definitely
Well, yeah, and you know, it's funny you mentioned the movie stuff, because I used to have friends, and I still have people, friends who still buy their Blu-rays, right?
Yeah.
They still buy their Blu-rays. Like, I own Blu-rays for movies that I particularly care about. You know, like, I have Star Trek 1 and 2. I have Scott Pilgrim versus the World. I have the CM Punk Best in the World DVD. Like, I have stuff for things that I particularly care about, right?
Yep, me too. But I just bought Home Alone on Blu-ray.
I'm not going to kid myself in saying that, like, and I'm sure, you know, hundreds of thousands like me, that's all we're getting. We're not getting anything else. And it doesn't matter how many things they could throw onto a disc, it's going to make its way to the internet eventually. Yeah. So I'm just going to end up downloading it digitally, or just watching it on YouTube, watching it on Netflix, whatever, because digital download is going to be a thing. And that is going to relate to game development. That's going to relate to movie productions. That's going to relate to music, so on, so forth. We're not going to own our copies of our games much longer, you know? And it sucks to say that, because I love that. I love going at a 12 o'clock midnight launch to go pick up a game. It's one of my favorite things to do. It's what makes us awesome. But now we're just going to all have to go on Twitter and just say, I'm downloading it. Instagram picture.
Yeah. I mean, The other pro side to that, though, is that people, like, in my case, I have really slow internet. You know, I preloaded Master Chief Collection and downloaded the update before everybody else got it with their physical copy. As soon as that was there, it was up at 12:01 that next morning or whatever, and I was able to play. You know, I know people that were like stuck at 95% and couldn't go any faster. You know, the install was constantly screwing up, so they had to uninstall it, reinstall it. So it was, it can go both ways. It really can. It can go, it could be good, it could be bad. But honestly, I still think I'd rather have my physical copy of it, though.
I wouldn't say.
It's going to go the way of Blockbuster.
Yeah, right. If that's any indication.
Yeah. I mean, just look at Netflix. Yeah.
Wait, is there a Blockbuster by you, Dust? Please tell me there is one. Like,
I actually,
there's one by me.
I did see one recently somewhere. I forget where I was, but I actually did see one recently.
It's like a Loch Ness Monster or Bigfoot sighting.
It was in a 90s history magazine.
it's like, oh, dude, did you hear? Yo, there's a Blockbuster like a mile away. No, that's crazy. Really?
We should all buy shares in Enron.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, another thing that's starting to take over that too, and I'm not trying to stray away from all of everything, but it's the Redbox thing is starting to go away too. I've noticed that. Like, Redbox, now that you can have it on Xbox, people are just going to sit there and rather stream it than have to get in their car, waste their gas, and go pick it up.
Well, even think about Netflix. Netflix also was the same thing, right? Like, people were okay with getting the physical discs, but now it's like, I don't want that crap. I want the digital stuff. And Netflix is, you know, the business that pretty much made Netflix, while still thriving, it's an afterthought in comparison to what they're doing digitally. Right. Like, it's again, it's just all signs pointing toward that. And video games, ironically enough, is one of the most progressive fields, you know, in entertainment. In the entertainment industry, has been the slowest adopter to digital content. Right. Now, PC, obviously, you know, aside, I mean, console gaming is, I would say, what the average consumer relates to when they hear, you know, video games. They think of, oh, my PlayStation, my Nintendo, my Xbox, right? They think of those things. And as much as, of course, I don't want to anger PC fans, which I do on a regular basis, I'm positive that this is, you know, a thing. We haven't really adopted that process yet, because a lot of people are so afraid of this control, you know, like that these guys would have, because, you know, corporations are evil and, you know, they do evil things. So, you know, that's just, it's crazy, man. But we're going to eventually all just kind of have to suck it up and just admit that we're downloading things digital. It's going to happen.
Right.
Yeah.
And to that, I mean, to continue on, kind of bring it back around, the whole thing where we're having a game now that has some stuff that still needs to be worked out is something that it's going to be an issue kind of going forward. I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of the launch titles for PlayStation and Xbox going forward are going to have issues day one, just because of how complex and how big games are getting. And as as code grows bigger, there's an exponential growth of possible problems that come out of it. And for the Master Chief Collection, they're sticking 5 games into one platform. There's bound to be issues with something
that big. I guarantee you that this is not the last of the launch day issues. To be honest with you, this is only the tip of the iceberg, in my opinion. At this point now, it's up to developers to minimize the problems, but it's going to keep happening, whether we like to admit it or not.
Well, yeah. I think at this point, it's something where 343 kind of learns from this. They're putting a lot of time and effort into making sure that they can get the Master Chief working the way fans want it to work in a reasonable amount of time. They're working around the clock for that, I think. That's one thing that people need to understand. The second thing is that 343 needs to take this as a learning experience, and other developers as well. And maybe Xbox needs to maybe revamp some of their development tools to where they can do load balance testing on a lot much larger scale, have test environments where they can do a lot bigger and thorough testing to kind of help minimize a lot of the issues that have popped up with the Master Chief Collection and some of the other stuff. I mean, I work on a huge exchange environment for what I do for work, and we run into issues all the time. There's always something going on. There's always something that we're fixing, and I know for the consumer market, it's always the one for instant gratification. The thing that I buy should work regardless of how I get it. And that's what everyone's expectations were for the Master Chief Collection. And when it didn't deliver, everyone is here flaming 343, blaming Xbox and all that stuff. Which is, it's rightfully so to be frustrated and to be upset and to be angry. But then again, there is a whole other side of that. You shouldn't be just harassing and berating 343 and Xbox for this, because it's not going to help the situation at all. They're aware of it. You should definitely be vocal about the issues that are coming up, be vocal about your frustrations. But one of the things that I have that's really kind of irked me over the past few days is just how people are treating Xbox and 343. And
while they were right behind them in the beginning, it's just funny how people can just turn things around so quick.
Yeah, but I get it too, man. It's the state of the industry. It's perception, and it's expectations, and people feel heartbroken. Like when Halo 2 first came out, or when Halo CE first came out, you didn't have these like crazy problems. I mean, I remember when Halo 3 came out, there were issues. Like you actually couldn't for a little while. Like parties were a little broken, and you couldn't. I think games were fine, but there was a lot of lag because of, so many people playing. And it was, I remember all that, like, dude, it just happens, right? It just happens. And now it's, if there's a glitch, you have an issue, take a picture, send it over to put it on, put it on Halo or Halo, put it on Twitter, send it to the appropriate people. These people are reading everything, right?
Right.
They're constantly trying to see like what's going on and how can they improve.
Right. Well, and for me, it's just being respectful about it. Yeah, you can be frustrated. Yeah, you can voice your anger and distaste for what happened with it. But there's absolutely no reason to just berate or belittle 343 or Xbox. And I've seen a lot of that like on social media. And it's just one of those things that, as someone that's very passionate about the Halo community, and while I have the same frustrations, it's one of those things that really hurts to see, because it damages the community. It damages just the perception of 343 and all the effort that they're trying to put into it. And it just kind of belittles that. And it just sucks to see.
Because let's be honest, if you do see a message, if you're 343 and you see a message where people are swearing at you, you're just going to ignore it. And anything that is actually going to be any criticism in that statement, you're just going to ignore as well. So if you really want to get your point across, just word it. You don't have to be too nice about it, but you just have some respect about it, and they'll read it. But you've got so many social medias to do it. You've got Twitter, Facebook, Reddit, YouTube. They watch them all. Just do it in a way that's respectful, and they'll pay attention. They will.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I can imagine how many people got blocked over this last week. Just blocked because they just got tired of it.
As far as the rest of the update goes, 343 did release a full list of patch notes on there. There's a lot of matchmaking improvements, a lot of stuff that they've improved with the achievement system, a lot of stuff that they've done with Halo 2 and Halo 2 Anniversary, from improving in-game functionality, some split-screen stuff, post-game parties, making sure that they all stay together, and how some of the stuff works within matchmaking to try to help balance that out. And overall, they've said from their update that they released that statistically things have gotten better, which is a good sign. Not everyone is seeing that direct result, but the fact that they are seeing things progressively get better means that they're still going in the right direction. They're still trying to get things working. And it's just going to be a matter of time before things finally get smoothed out. And it's going to be rough seas from now until maybe a good month or two down the road. It'd be nice to see everything kind of resolved by Christmas time, so everyone that's planning to get Halo for Christmas has a good game to play when they open them on December 25th. But we really don't know what's going to be coming out at that point. And I think the best thing to do right now is just to keep letting 343 know what you're seeing, any issues that come up, any bugs, and there are a lot of them. Just keep being mindful of that. Keep letting them know what's going on. And all in all, just kind of chill and relax and give 343 the time they need to make this game what they know the fans want to see.
Yeah, because I think their next, I mean, their big deadline has to be in time for the Halo 5 beta. They've got to make sure they do get that right. If the Halo 5 beta goes off, you know, without a hitch, people will come back and they'll say, oh, okay, you know, fair enough. But if there's problems with that, though, that's going to be a big iffy point.
I agree. There's going to be a lot of pressure on them for the Halo 5 beta.
That's
they
have
to. They have to nail it.
Right.
It has to be not only great from the perspective of the, you know, like matchmaking and all that other stuff, but also like the feedback and the openness from the community, you know, people talking with Quinn and Josh and, you know, all the other guys, 343, about like what can be done and, you know, like what new improvements can be implemented and, you know, all those kinds of things. Like it needs to be like flawless, spot on. It's going to be a huge thing because people now are looking at this and they're using this to judge 343's quality of games. So that's why, you know, Halo 5, it's going to be very important for them to establish like, hey guys, like we messed up here. We overlooked a lot of things, but we are not doing this again. And I'm sure I'm all, like 100% positive that that is the mindset at 343 right now, especially going into this beta.
Right.
And I think it's all, I mean, they've said quite clearly they haven't moved the date back yet. It's still December 29th, but I would be for like delaying it a couple of weeks if they needed to get it right, because you muck this up. I don't want to say the next line because it would hurt, but genuinely, that's the state that they would put us in if that happened.
Right. And I know, Golden Boy, you and I had a chance to talk a little bit about Halo 5 when we were in LA. And I'd like to have you back on during or after the beta to kind of help talk about how Halo 5 fits from a competitive perspective with the new changes that are coming to it and what it could mean
for
the future of Halo esports. Because I think from my experience, and I don't know how much you got to play of it, but some of the things that they've added in there, I think with the balancing aspects for Sprint and some of the stuff that they've done with Thruster Pack, is actually really good and is helping kind of move Halo forward. And there's a few concerns I have, which I'm actually writing up to Quinn and Josh this weekend. It'd be nice to get to have you on again to talk about that when the beta's out or after the beta's done. I think that'd be a good discussion
Man,
to have.
I'd love to do it. It'd be great. I can't wait, man. I can't wait to see what Halo 5 is going to bring to the table.
I'm excited. I really am.
It's looking good. Really is. There's a lot of stuff that I'm waiting for Halo 5. I mean, just from view. I mean, granted, you guys got to play it from where I'm sitting in front of my TV, just watching the stream and watching all these videos. It looks incredible. Like it really does. It looks like, I don't know. There's a lot of doubts about it. I don't have any doubts in my mind at all.
I just like the way they're doing it nowadays. You know, it used to be a case of they would leak things out at events, but now you send people there, you know, your members of the community, and they slowly, they feedback stuff to the rest of the community. They say, well, this is what's going on. And I think that's the way they should do it.
I think the community one thing people need to keep in mind, though, when they play this is 343 is looking to keep evolving Halo as a franchise. It's not something where it's they want to be stagnant. They want to do the same thing over and over and over again, which a lot of gamers are resistant to change, which is understandable. But if there's a game that you liked passing the Halo franchise, then go play that game. Like, if you literally don't want anything to change, then stick with the game that's not going to change, is kind of the thing. So be open-minded about the changes that 343 is making with Halo 5. Give it a try. Have a go at it to get your own impressions of it. And then give 343 feedback, because they are looking for feedback from this. So just do that. That's my small Halo 5 rant for the night. But that's going to wrap it up for us tonight. Again, guys, the update's out. Let us know how the update's working for you. We'd love to hear you guys' feedback and to see how stuff's working better for you, what other issues you're seeing now. And again, just make sure you're vocal about it. Be respectful. Just keep telling 343 what's going on. Give them the valuable criticisms and feedback that they're looking for, and they're working around the clock to get things done. They really are. And I'll even attest to, within the first hour at the launch party, you saw 343 people walking back and forth and trying to get things addressed. So this was something that from the get-go, they've been working on nonstop. So I hope that kind of helps put some people's minds at ease. Like, I don't know if you saw any of it, Golden Boy, but like Toshi was going.
Oh no, I did.
Going back with like Dan and Frankie and Che, trying to like put updates on Twitter, touching back with the team in Seattle, making sure stuff was going, all that stuff. So,
They care. They care a lot.
They definitely do.
It goes without saying. You know, they know that a lot of people work at 343. Halo's their love and their passion. And it, knowing them personally, it's very unfortunate to see the issues that they're having right now. And I know them, like I said, I know them personally. I've worked with them in multiple events, and I know that those guys are grinding to give you guys a good experience. But one thing I will say about, you know, just kind of touch on H5 and Halo Fest and all that was it was really refreshing to see Quinn go to some of these pro players who are playing. Because he really cares about their opinion, their perspective on it. Because, you know, these guys know how to play Halo. And he would tell them, he's like, hey, give it to me. What do you like? What do you don't like? You know, tell me what you don't like more than what you like. Right. Like he was very upfront with a lot of them. And that was really cool to see, because it takes, you know, it takes a bold man to be able to admit, you know, like that they didn't do something that was up to the standards of, you know, what they perceived it to be. And Quinn's kind of that guy. So, you know, just big shout out to him, because I know that he's really trying to find a happy medium between a new generation of Halo players and all the legacy players who've been around this scene for a very long time.
Yep. I agree with you right there. Couldn't say it better myself. So that's going to wrap it up for us tonight, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. I want to give a huge thanks to Golden Boy for being on the show, and hopefully this will be the first of many other appearances on in the future.
I'm sure it will. Sure it will.
Jack, thanks again for coming on and being our competitive mind over here for Podtacular. Appreciate it.
No problem. I'll do it again, even though it is 5:30 in the morning.
So, everyone, thank you for tuning in to our live stream. And if you haven't tuned into our live stream, we record live on Twitch, usually Thursdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. We had a little change up for the West Coast people. So whenever we have the West Coast on, we have to kind of push it back. No, you're not the only one. We have to do that kind of often whenever we have West Coast people on. So
No, we never have to do that. It was all your fault. It was aggravating. I'll be honest. Jeez. We were very angry.
Hey, we already talked about not doing the blame game, so stop it.
No, genuinely.
Well, no blame game? Oh, that can get
Had you not done that, Golden Boy, I wouldn't have even been on tonight, because I had problems with my phone. That's actually saying, do you want to be on the podcast? And I said, yeah, I do. Oh, well, that message came 4 hours ago. It's like, we can do it tomorrow. So, oh, great.
There you go. Glad it worked out well for everyone.
It all worked out.
Indeed.
So make sure you guys check out Golden Boy. He is all over the internet. I think you're Golden Boy for the win on Twitter and Twitch. Is that correct? Or FTW?
Yeah, it's, Golden Boy FTW for Twitter, Twitch, and my YouTube is Golden Boy FTW TV. If you search Golden Boy FTW on YouTube, you'll find me.
And the Golden Nugget's back.
Yes. Yeah. I was supposed to make one that was supposed to come out today. But the way it's probably going to end up going is every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday will be a release, or maybe Monday, you know, like we'll see. I mean, whatever floats my boat. So I'm really excited to get back into doing a little YouTube content and, you know, streaming more and whatnot.
Awesome. Make sure you check him out. He's really good to follow. He does a lot of cool stuff with the Halo community, as you guys have heard tonight. So he's very important. And what events are you going to be at coming up for HCS?
Well, not an HCS event, but I'll be at Gfinity in London next week, which is going to be very exciting. It's actually my first time going to London with my wife. I'm bringing her with me so we can, you know, like see the sights and stuff. And I'm also, you know, going to be working the first time ever with Gfinity, which is very exciting. I really like those guys. And then after that, it will be the Iron Gaming event going on in Columbus, IG Columbus. I believe that will be going on. I think that's December 12th and the 13th, I want to say.
12th through the 14th, I think.
12th and the 14th. Yeah. Let me actually see here on Halo, but I believe that those are the dates. So sorry about that. Yeah. 12th and the 14th. And then I'm also going to be doing the Halo, you know, anniversary tournament for UGC. It's going to be an HCS event in St. Louis. That will be January 2nd and the 4th. And those are the events I'm doing right now. So more to come. And more competitive Halo down the line, which is always exciting. Watch all the guys on Twitch. Like whoever here is like listening to the podcast and has an interest in learning a little bit more about Halo, you have guys on Twitch like Walshy, Snipe Down, Ninja. You know, I mean, the list can go on and on. Roy Lunchbox, Pistola, Mickwin, Cloud, like incredible players, Lethal, APG. I mean, it's just the best that I've ever played Halo. Watch them, learn from them, have fun in their chats, and you know, and just watch and play more Halo.
There you go. You and Jack can meet up when you're in London.
Yeah, I was gonna say that, but yeah, I think. Oh wait, when did you say you're coming out?
Next weekend.
I will be out next weekend.
I gotta make sure I'm not working.
If you want to go to Gfinity, you have an open invite. I'll bring you in.
Yeah.
There you go.
I've just got to make sure I'm not working, because I think I might be, but I will just cancel my shifts, basically.
Nice.
In terms of seeing the sights in London, just basically get a Zone 1 pass. You don't need to go outside of Zone 1.
Yeah, my wife is great at planning all that stuff. I'm awful at it. Without her, I literally would not be able to see a single sight, because she's the one who plans everything. She's like, okay, this is our agenda for today, this is our agenda for tomorrow. It's like, it's awesome. I'm super grateful to have her, so should be fun.
That's awesome. That's really cool to see.
Yeah. And she's also a big Halo fan, by the way. Sorry. Massive
good.
Halo fan, FYI.
Well, then she should get at least part of the money that FIFA bribed you with, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So she should be getting also my invisible checks from 343 that
exactly.
For to say nice things about the game. Yes.
Yeah. Nice.
Couldn't agree more.
For everything else on our Twitch, we normally do Tactical Tuesdays and Wacky Wednesdays. We're still kind of holding those on 360 because of the stability there. Once things get sorted out with custom lobbies and matchmaking on the Master Chief Collection, we'll migrate back over, or try to migrate back over, on the Xbox One side of things. But for now, we're going to keep those on the 360 until we see that stabilize. Hope you guys are okay with that. Sorry if anyone like sold their 360 to get an Xbox One, but we're going to stick with what works for now and what we know we can get people on and actually have some good quality games. So those happen on 8:30 p.m. Eastern time on those respective days. And you can also check us out on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. We have all that nice social media stuff. And also check out our sister podcast. We're part of the podcast network that is thepodcast.com. has other podcasts along the likes of Guardian Radio, Critscast, Reachcast, How to Murder Time, and Work in Progress. Make sure you guys check those out if you are looking for some other gaming podcasts to get into. And just like we said earlier in the show, we'd love to hear what your guys' experiences are with the Master Chief Collection, whether it be frustrations that you're having, whether it be some actually cool things that you're having to see in the campaign, or anything that you want to comment on regarding some of the extra terminals that you see in Halo 2. We want to hear from you. So you can do that in a couple of ways. First way you can do that is sending us an email to submissions@poddackler.com. Or you can call our listener voicemail at 240-200-4256. That's 240-200-HALO. And leave a 90-second message there. And we'll play those on the show once we have a good number of those. And we'd love to just hear from you guys, hear what your experiences is, and let you be a part of the show. Another way to kind of get involved with us is to go visit our website, poddackler.com, and get involved in the forums. We have a forum that is still growing, still building. Hoss Sauce, our community manager, is doing a good job of keeping stuff fresh in there, keeping topics relevant, and trying to get more people in there to talk stuff. So it's slowly growing, and if you're looking for more discussions to about the Master Chief Collection, about Halo in general, whether it be books, movies, toys, whatever, then we encourage you to drop on by, give it a try, and see what you guys like. And if you like it, stick around, and we'd love to chat with you on the forums. With that said, thanks again, Jack, for being on, and Golden Boy, thank you for your first appearance, and we'll hopefully see you on very soon. This has been episode 453 of Podtacular, and we will see you next time. Keep on fragging those bugs, those day one bugs.